Hello, everyone, and welcome to iGel Weekly. I'm your host, Andy Whiteside. This is episode 19. Of course, I got my buds with me here. We were just having a great conversation talking about new normal and new life, how things are panning out to be these days. Chris Feeney, how's it going?
It is going as normal could be, right? I mean, bouncing around. I'm excited about today's topic. Near and dear to me from when I first came to iGel, going into a very highly secure arena in federal. And today we're talking about security. And I know Seb is jacked. He put this topic together on our community. So very excited about that. iGel is definitely not slacking in terms of the security. So
ready to roll. And the reality is iGel, a read-only Linux layered approach, managed approach, is a massive security play. I mean, most of our vulnerabilities these days happen at the endpoints, whether it's a physical or virtual session. And iGel makes for, I was on site with a client. Okay, so the new normal. Let's talk about that just for a minute. Mm-hmm. So this, I'm going on my second business trip of the week. Seb and I were talking before this, what the new normal looks like. I am scared to death of the new normal because the new normal is the old normal plus, not in lieu of, but plus the pandemic normal. And then you bolt those two together and that's the new normal. It's going to kill me. I mean, we're 20 years late starting this podcast because of the new normal. I don't know how we're going to deal with the new normal. Seb, how's it going?
Yeah, totally.
Seb, how's it going?
Oh, quite fine. I must say it's Friday, so I can't feel better than now, to be honest. In a couple of hours, I'm leaving for the weekend. So, but be that, no, I'm feeling pretty fine. It's going back to normal on our side. At least we think that in the agile community, we see that we have less questions asked in the last, let's say, 1 or 2 weeks. And we feel that people are traveling again, are going back to customers more than having Zoom session all the day long. That's just a trend we are seeing at the moment. I hope that you can confirm that on your side, because it feels like that at the moment, that we're coming back to something which is the standard business.
So has Doug Brown started traveling again yet?
No, he is traveling inside of Berlin, which is more than enough for him.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's a joke, kind of, sort of. But, you know, Doug's a road warrior, has been historically. And so when Doug starts traveling again, then we know that we're at the new normal, which, again, to my point, is going to be interesting because we've got a world where all the things that happened during the pandemic need to keep happening while the things that happened prior to the pandemic are happening again. And things like security, things like evolving these projects in newer, different ways, but they're happening. They've got to happen. Those all become the new reality. Maybe we should call it the new reality instead of the new normal. And we're all going to have to figure out a way to use things like technology to deal with them. Chris, have you started traveling much yet?
A little bit. Things are beginning to get on the calendar, or crazy things like, hey, we're trying to get this thing scheduled, and all of a sudden, it pops up, and you're like, wait, I mean, 2 days notice? I mean,
yeah.
So, I'm kind of like you, like, crap. I mean, I've been so used to this other normal for the last year, getting back into travel plus, you know, the way we've been living our lives. I'm going to need some transitioning. So, but I suspect once we hit July into Q3 in the end of the year, it'll begin to get some hybrid, I guess we use that word a lot.
The new reality.
Right. So
here's a great way to segue into what we're going to talk about here. The old normal, security was important, right? True or false?
It was.
The pandemic normal, it became even more aware that we needed to have security as a focus of everything we do, right? True or false?
True.
I would say true and false at the same time, at least on the start where we went in the telework situation. I can only speak for EMEA, obviously. There, the security level wasn't such important because they just wanted to go into teleworker situation. They don't even thought about how to secure the endpoints. And then they thought in the second step, after the first 2 weeks, hey, what about antivirus? What about secured access to the remote apps? And that's where the security came back. But I would say for 2 or 3 weeks, Yeah. No one cared about security, just going back to telework situation.
But Seb, by the end of the pandemic normal, it was paramount that we had created a bigger mess, and security needed to be part of that bigger mess story than ever, right?
Agree to 100%.
So if we go to November, like Chris was just talking about, the new reality, the new normal, you know, pre-pandemic, pandemic normal, all thrown together, chances are security is still going to be one of the top things that we need to make sure we don't lose sight of. True or false?
Yeah.
So that leads us right into Seb's write-up for today, which is tech tips, the new tech tips Tuesday video. And it's a video. We're going to talk about it here and make sure people get another way to consume it and hear about it. And we'll, you know, we can, you can easily find this. How to enhance iGEL OS security via the iGEL UMS. Now, quick question for you, Seb and Chris both. In general, without doing anything else, would you say that iGEL adds to your security posture, even if you didn't take it the steps further that we're going to talk about here, just moving away from Windows or even Mac and having a read-only operating system? That's a massive step, and potentially accessing, you know, hosted apps or virtual desktops or SaaS managed apps or SaaS apps. Just that step alone is a massive step in a security posture. Would you guys agree?
Yes, definitely. I would just add one thing. iGEL OS itself alone, just let's say to 90%, but as soon as you have the iGEL UMS or ICG in place and you have at least an administrator password set, then I'm to 100% on your side, definitely a way more secure.
And real quick, by administrator password, you're talking about the root password on the iGEL device or all the passwords along the ecosystem?
That's a great discussion, because the administrator password that we are defining is also the root password of the endpoint. So that's one of the first steps I'll try to achieve when it comes to security. But that's, we'll come to that point at least in 2 or 3 minutes, I guess.
So I've got a call later today with a group of guys that have a security department that wants to work with my company. And one of the very first things I'm going to ask them is using Citrix or VMware Horizon, where the data never necessarily leaves the data center and all you're doing is remotely accessing a virtual instance and potentially doing that from a secure Linux-based endpoint. Is that a security play? Is that a security posture? And I can tell you that half the security people I talk to, they just totally dismiss that. Like, that's not what we do. We're Palo Alto and we're all these other security, you know, edge and managed detection and response stuff. And that's great. But if you don't see remoting into a system versus actually physically possessing it as a security play, then I can't work with you. Because to me, the very first time I remoted into a Citrix session in 1998, I was like, well, that's pretty secure. And a lot of people in the security realm don't even see that as a security play. Your thoughts on that?
Chris?
I was thinking about this, right? Going to some of these trade shows and looking across who's sponsoring it, what do they do, what problems they solve, you know, and especially in the security realm, you know, coming at it from the end user computing point of view, a lot of it was that, you know, back end network monitoring, great, you know, but what about even getting there in the first place, right? And so, I mean, okay, if somebody's already in and you're detecting it, okay, that's fine. That's great. You figured it out. But how about like not getting them there in the first place? So why don't we look at where it starts, right? Begin, you know, from that perspective. And so, you know, there's a lot of great products out there. I mean, obviously, you know, some of the things that have been in the news more recently, the SolarWinds rev, and that was obviously a tremendous, you know, situation to the point where you can't even trust the software anymore. But I think, you know, I always come back to the security versus convenience play, right? As Seb alluded to, right? Over in Europe, there was not a lot of work from home thing. People weren't used to that. All of a sudden it became a massive need. Security was set aside for the convenience factor. Then security came back in the room and said, wait a second. I saw it in healthcare when there was massive incentive to get to that electronic medical record as quickly as possible. Turn off the password expiration policies. Okay. because the doctors, we can't have them resetting passwords in the middle of whatever. And then security began to show up in the room after that project had been deployed, and now they wanted to start clamping down. So it's always been that that convenience versus security play. That's how I've looked at it in these vendors. So, Seb, what do you think?
It's pretty tough discussion, I must say. I guess it's sometimes really dependent from the culture of the company itself and depends from where you're acting from. I guess a bank is definitely acting differently than someone who is working for a small company delivering manufacturing parts for some suppliers.
But Seb, are you saying that because the security doesn't apply, or it's just harder for them to spend as much time focusing on it?
I would say the second one. Spending time, it's in most cases that I'm seeing, security isn't a topic that you can cover in 10 minutes. It's days and days and days of discussion, a tool set of software that you are installing, integrating into different operating system levels. And in most cases, I must admit that the end user isn't asked that much for his feedback because it's security and he has to apply, he has to accept it. And that's, I guess, one of the biggest challenges that we have to face is to include the end user and his or her feedback into that feedback loop, because then we are missing people, or they will try to tweak around and to bypass the security by sending out their Excel sheets to their private email address just to be sure that they can work like they would do at home. And yeah, for the non-data privacy reason, I would recommend that. So,
but Seb, going back to the original question, security was important before. It was security during and at the end, maybe not in the very, very beginning, even though we knew it was. We just had to skip it for now. And then the new normal, right? The new reality, post-pandemic reality, our thoughts on making sure we're doing everything we can to be secure, which could start with just a remoting protocol and a secure endpoint. And then now what we're going to talk about in this podcast around securing it even further, that the security doesn't go away no matter what the next evolution of whatever it is, does it?
I agree. I mean, we are seeing it on Apple side, right? So people are asked to come back to the office at the moment. And that would be a question that I would ask myself is, how will most of our companies react to people coming back to the office? Will they stay on their Citrix, VMware Verizon session or whatever? Or will they come back to a local work? And that's a question that I cannot answer for the moment, but I would be more than happy to be, let's say, 6 months in the future to see how it was.
Yeah. I want to share with you guys a story real quick. I worked with a financial institution not too many weeks ago, and I walked in to do a POC, and I didn't have to worry about the madness of all the different VLANs because they don't have VLANs. And I'm sitting there going, well, this is going to make this project super easy, but I don't understand how an organization in the financial world in 2021 doesn't have VLANs set up to kind of isolate their traffic. And I mentioned it to the individual running the network there. And they said, yeah, we just had a security audit a few weeks ago. And man, they blew us up on that. But going back to your point a while ago, the size of your organization might dictate on how seriously you can afford to take the time and spend the money on security. Moving to a delivered solution like Citrix plus iGel automatically fixes a lot of problems and solves other problems all at the same time, right?
Yeah. Yep. I'm just looking at the list here on the topics is on the community blog, going down sort of like, if you were to do one thing, you install iGel out of the gate, it comes up, what would be the first thing you should do it's already secure, not a lot of ports open, so there's not a lot of ways to get access to it. But one of the first demos that I saw was from my buddy Josh. He had what he called a base config. And so I was like, well, what do you do? First thing he does is he disables access to the local setup, that little round blue with the little wrench thing, right? If you give a user access to the local setup, they can change anything. So number one, remove access to that or put a password on it. And once you've got that clamped down, you can basically, go from there. There's a lot of stuff that's already off, but enforcing some of this stuff. So I don't know if it's a good transition to kind of go through some of those things now.
Yeah, let's do that. We've got about 20 minutes left before all of us have to jump to our next thing. Seb, we've flushed out that security is paramount here. We've flushed out that iGel is a secured play. So is all the remoting protocol stuff, you know, WVD, now known as, I think, AVD.
Yeah.
That's a whole other conversation. Citrix, VMware Horizon, Workspace ONE. Help us understand in this video that you created, what are you covering here? What are the things in this video that that helped to secure the iGel story even further?
Great point. So we're not digging into the command line like I would do in some specific cases. All we are seeing now in the video is promoted, is populated by using the Universal Management Suite, also known as UMS. So you don't have to think about Linux commands, something like that. It's all in your profiles. First thing, there is no size fits all. So every customer is different, every situation is different, and even every security requirement is different from company to company. So we are covering it, let's say, from an average point of view, what I would do if I would do a demo when I was a pre-sales person at a customer, and he is asking, what can I do if I want more security? So first, we have to mention that the Azure operating system is coming with all features besides two or three exceptions, enabled by default. Features are, in our language, client components, drivers, web browser, and you can go over that list for hours because we have a lot of features enabled. So a customer who is just wanting to use Citrix will not need the VMware Horizon client anymore. Or people who are saying we don't need the web browser, then just disable that feature because it will reduce, from a first point of view, the size of your operating system, the size of the updates you are delivering, but also a possible attack surface. Because just thinking about the web browser, not saying that you cannot do a lot of stuff on the network side, no question. But the Firefox will try to update his malware definition. Not a bad thing at all, but he will try that. And if someone would take over that mirror where these files are exchanged, I mean, it's really high-level stuff, but it could be a security breach. So first thing, disable features that you don't need.
Seb, can I pause you on this one real quick?
Yeah, please.
So iGel, when you install the operating system, installs all the features. I did work with Chris recently to upgrade one of my boot sticks, the converter, and I did notice in the newer install, you had the option of not installing features and opting into the things you want. Did I dream that, or is that a direction iGel is going simultaneously or in lieu of?
I will not cover a secret stuff, but we might see, Chris is already knowing it, some stuff next year in an upcoming version of iGel OS. That's it.
Yeah.
But at the moment, on the OSC side, it's absolutely true. So you can... if you boot up the OSC or using the PXE app, then you can choose which kind of features you want to install, for the simple fact that you have sometimes not enough space on your hardware either. So you can disable some features to save some space. Sorry, Chris, I didn't want to interrupt you.
Yeah, no, that's, it's been a great addition for a variety of things, right? Certainly by reducing the image and what features are installed. And by features, we're looking at things like, you know, the clients, right? The Cisco, the WebEx, the Citrix, you know, the stuff that we include. The more stuff we've included, obviously the image, you know, is beginning to kind of get beyond that 2 gig phase. So that opportunity to use that OSC and reduce those things on that initial image. You could also use that. There's also a new thing that allows you to maybe make that sort of your golden image that you could push out, for example. So there's two new things there. And we've seen situations, right, where, you know, there are indeed, there's one in particular where they had to reduce the size, and I think it was try to get it under 1 gig. They only needed Citrix, and so they took off a bunch of stuff they absolutely did not need because they had.
So you're saying that what I saw and stumbled upon the other day wasn't a security move, it was a size reduction move. But I would argue that, you know, removing some of that stuff for size also reduces your attack vector. Is that, what do you think?
Correct.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good. That's it's always good when you get two wins at the same time.
And so, sometimes it's already wanted.
So Seb, I cut you off. I think you were moving on to the next topic, which was this.
Yeah.
and password. But if not, feel free to tell me where we are at in the conversation.
That's perfect. No, we are on the admin password side, and please interrupt me as soon as you have a question, because I'm rushing through and I'm overseeing some topics sometimes. So definitely please interrupt me. The administrator password. So the next topic is the easiest way to block access, in my opinion, to different areas of our operating system. So as soon as you create an administrator password, when you go to security password, you are defining a root / administrator password for your device. I'm not only saying root, just because the root is a user, it's the highest user possible in the Azure and Linux operating system. But besides that, you're also blocking access to some resources like what Chris already mentioned, the Azure setup. So the local configuration tool. You cannot open it then if you have set an administrator password without that password. That's really important. So I fully agree with Chris. Azure setup is a base you have to cover. I'm doing it with a password, but you can also remove it from the taskbar. Doesn't play a sense. It just keep it away from the user. But then you are disabling access, at least unwanted access, to the console switcher. So we'll cover that a little bit later on. But if you press Control-Alt and F11 or F12, you are switching from the graphical user interface into the command line interface. And if you haven't set an administrator password, you could log in there. And yeah, if you know a little bit of things, doing some stuff there. I mean, it's not really something that is highly critical, but I would try to avoid it since someone could try to implement something if he knows how to deal with Azure OS. And one additional thing, which is important in my opinion too, is the reset to factory defaults, boot menu. We covered that also in an upcoming tutorial, but if you boot up an Azure operating system, you can press the escape key on your keyboard during the boot up process. And besides the fact that your hypervisor might already interrupt that, just after that, there is an Azure boot menu.
Yeah.
There you can do some verbose boot, some CSC checks. That's perfect. But in the next step, you can do a reset to factory defaults. And there, without a password, you could do some fun stuff like reset the device to the state where Azure delivered it.
Yeah.
And that's not something you would do without a password. So that's an additional level of security that this administrator password brings in.
Yeah, one thought on that, just a final on that topic, using profiles, the concept of a master profile. So if you use a master profile versus a normal profile, you know, that will override anything that maybe somebody tries to create a separate password or whatever. So if you have not used the master profiles feature in UMS, certainly it's a checkbox to enable it. The profiles basically are built the same. It's just an orange color icon versus green. But I've seen that with some customers where they have, at the highest level, their base config, admin passwords or other settings, and then other features on regular profiles.
Hey guys, just a quick time check. Seb, I think I can move my meeting that's coming up. Do you have time to go over? This is
yeah, sure.
This is too good to stop. Chris, I know you have.
Yeah, I'm good for another 15. So,
but I think we're going to need more than 15. This is awesome. Yeah. We need to make sure we hit it. So Chris, feel free to drop if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a wave goodbye or just interrupt and say goodbye. But Seb, the next topic here, and it's awesome. You've got it timestamped in here as the what part of which piece, which is, that's awesome.
Yes.
Disabling exactly. The smart card daemon. Is that where we want to go next and talk about?
Yes, exactly. So the smart card stuff isn't needed everywhere. When I say smart card stuff, there is a so-called
PSCD.
Yeah, but I was searching for the complete term. So it's smart card daemon, but I was searching for the first one. I just forget what PSSC is meaning if I would write it down. But this daemon is a daemon that is checking more or less every millisecond if a smart card is inserted, and if something was inserted, if it would do something. So there is a watch daemon connected with that. And if no one is needing that daemon, I mean, it's not a high CPU usage at all. But even that, if something is not needed, I prefer to deactivate it since it's just reducing the amount of processes running on the Azure endpoint. And in a former time, disabling that the daemon was a kind of performance tweaking that we applied when it was really on the early stages of thin client operating system, where we had to look at every millisecond of CPU time we had And that's just a kind of stuff that I hold for myself. I'm always disabling if the customer is saying we don't need smart cards at all, you can turn it off.
Yeah, it just makes sense. I mean, we should turn off things we don't need, and we get the, like we talked about, security benefit every time we do that.
Exactly.
I mean, that's I guess that's one thing to say. It's obvious. I'm sure it's obvious, but it needs to be stated. This is all software, you know, ones and zeros written by human beings who have flaws. Every time you turn something on, there's a chance it will break, or eventually will break, or it's insecure. And there is no piece of software that's 100% secure, because it was written by a human being, and another human being can figure out how to break it.
Absolutely agree.
Yep. The next one, yeah, this is SSH. So I'll take that, Seb, if you want.
Please.
So, you know, obviously one way you can access IGL remotely, a device, is through SSH. And so it is enabled by default, but you would need to add a little bit more, either A, turn it off, as it suggested here. That's very simple, checkbox, turn it off. If you do need it, obviously put some passwords around it, if you're going to be making that remote connection to it, or have it such that when you need to enable it, you apply a profile to it with the right, you know, additional settings. And then when you're done, you remove the access to it. So that just, again, just another port that it's listening on, and you can just turn that off. I know oftentimes, you know, you have customers that want to scan the device, right? And so they'll ask for credentialed scans. That's typically done through an SSH connection with account that has privileges to go in and then look inside the OS and see what's there, type thing. So, but real simple, just turn that off when you don't need it. And if you are going to use it, definitely use it with some passwords. The nice thing is the administrator login is not allowed out of the gate. It's already turned off. If you want to allow it, like that root login, you would have to enable it and leverage that password that we talked about in the earlier on the 5 minutes and 5 seconds into the video that Seb so nicely put together.
Remote access when you're troubleshooting stuff is the greatest thing ever. It's also the unintentional backdoor to everything. And so many people don't think about making sure that's turned off. Whether it's on by default, now turn it off, or whether it's off by default, trust but verify.
Mm-hmm. And never forget that if you need some remote access to the endpoint, you are not able to do that through SSH natively because you don't have a PuTTY, whatever else. We have secure terminal. I mean, that's another topic and is maybe part of an upcoming podcast, but you have the secure terminal through the UMS, which enables you to have access of a kind of command line via the UMS context menu. But yeah.
Well, and here's the most beautiful thing about IGEL, other than the fact that I'm a big fan that it includes multiple versions of the Citrix Workspace app, which I thought was the greatest thing ever when I first saw it. But the other part of IGEL is the ability to manage all of this through the UMS, so that if we need to turn on SSH at any point in time, we turn it on, we wait the couple of seconds for the client to check in, and now we have it. And then we use what we need to use, and then we turn it off. First time I really experienced UMS, it was a game changer in the thin client world to have something that worked better than Windows does in terms of profiles and policies, and was super reliable and powerful.
I agree. For the feedback.
Yeah, that's what blew me away. It caught me on, was like, this is a game changer. So these next two, I think we can probably combine because they're somewhat related, but Seb, you want to crack on USB and storage stuff?
Yeah. With pleasure. So, like you already know, we are detecting more or less every USB device which is connected to an endpoint which is powered with AgileOS. Basically, we are splitting the detection and mounting in two different sections. So let's stay on the USB access control. As soon as you use this USB access control and you deny everything beside HID devices like mouse and keyboards, please don't expect that we are locking down a USB port physically. That's something that we cannot do at the moment. So you will still be able to charge your iPhone or Android phone, whatever, by using the USB port. The only thing that is not possible then anymore is to use it in a native USB redirection or in a local mounting process that you are using. It's not blocking the whole interaction. It just blocks the way how the kernel interacts with the device. So it's not a hardware level, it's really a software level. But if you're enable the
situation where people fill USB ports with epoxy, I didn't think it was true. And then one time I was working with a government agency and I saw it like that. They, unlike this, right, we're intelligently disabling what it can do while leaving its functionality to, you know, be a port in reality there. But I've seen it once where they actually go in and they put something in the USB port and glue it in to try to prevent people from using it.
Oh,
yeah. Imagine having that job. By default, I'm looking here at our settings. By default, the only thing that you're going to be able to use, you know, USB wise is your keyboard and mouse, HID stuff, right? You can plug it in. We'll see it. You could do run a command line LSUSB. We'll see the fact that there's something plugged in, but that doesn't mean you're going to be able to access it without some additional settings. So it's nice. That's one of those default security postures that's really nice about iGel. I would stand these things up in a federal environment, knowing that it's going to get, you know, extremely looked at, you know, who's iGel, blah, blah, blah. We never heard of this thing. Having the already in a secure posture, like, hey, plug that in, see what happens.
Well, for our listeners, let's talk about the alternative, which would be running Windows. And it's debatable whether this still works or not, but it seems to still work, and or at least it did for a long time. Other ways to exploit it, but just plugging in a USB device and booting from that USB device and grabbing the local or the domain admin, the local hash for the domain admin. There's been years and years of exploits where, you know, if you had physical access to a Windows device, that was one way to circumvent all other security and just run around with that hash, getting into whatever you wanted to.
Yeah. Honestly, I tried to do that on my private level because I'm using macOS, I'm using Linux, and I'm also using Windows at home. And I tried to make that on a private level, how to block that kind of attacks. And you can definitely block some kind of plug and play events on Windows. Mm-hmm. But honestly, as soon as you do that, you are losing so much functionalities that you are turning it on again. So that's definitely something which is, and even on Azure OS, by the way, this USB access control is something that I would enable at the end of a POV, because if you do some bad stuff there, you will block the recognition of the USB mass storage devices, of some headset, videos, cameras, etc. But that's definitely something I would consider, but at the end of the POV when everything else is functioning, because then you can say, okay, if it's not working now anymore, it is related to the UDEF rules that we are using on the USB access control side.
Absolutely. Yeah, and getting that right, I mean, on a variety of things. One of my first accounts was DEA, I'll just use them, and they had, you know, we looked at two scenarios, right, where we had a white list of things that we would allow to get plugged in, as well as, you know, blacklist, right? And so we kind of looked at it as allow these or allow all, but only allow them to get plugged in and literally just automatically directed into the virtual desktop. So different ways you can approach these things. But definitely if you lock it out at the beginning and then you're trying to do something and you're not quite sure what's wrong, it's probably because you tightened it up so hard at the beginning. I'm also a fan of that. If you're just a POV, you know, demonstrate the use case and then come back and start restricting the security to make sure that, you know, it's still going to work or whatever. Which, you know, certainly leads to sort of this next one, this hot plug, right? I mean, that's a lot of the common things. I've got this USB stick. It's got what I want to pull some data down from the virtual session and you know, copy it to that thing or something like that. So maybe transition to that one right now.
Sure. Yeah, let's do it. This is just such a good topic. This whole concept, this whole topic of secure by default, but let's make it more secure. Seb, yeah. Disable storage hot plug. You're talking about hot plug and play for mass storage devices, right?
Yes, exactly. So as soon as you connect a USB stick or USB drive to the Azure REST, by standard, it will not do anything besides recognizing the device on the operating system level. But since we need then for writing or reading stuff from it to mount it to some directory, to some mount point, we have to define a couple of rules. And this rule set can be defined manually or be done automatically by checking one checkbox in your profile, which is enable hot plug events, if I remember right. And that means that as soon as the device is connected, it will be auto-mounted into a specific folder, which is great if you want to map that resource to a Citrix terminal server VDI, because that's the most common use case, that you have a USB stick and you want to copy files on it or read files from it. But that's something that I'm asking, is that wanted? And if not, I'm disabling that storage hot plug feature with the master profile that Chris already mentioned, just to be sure that it cannot be overwritten by someone else, because that's one of the, I would say not the one of the entry points, but one of the possible entry point for viruses, for data exploits, etc. So disabling it gives you a little bit more security, but takes a lot of flexibility too. So we just have to be clear that we have to find a good balance between both the user experience and the security, what we already discussed at the beginning.
Well, and this next one goes along a similar line, right? We talked about Bluetooth enabled headsets the other day, and you know, all of us agreed if you can wire, wire. However, we live in a world today where there's tons of Bluetooth devices we want to use that may or may not even come with a wire or a capability of wiring it into the system. Similar thing here, right? Bluetooth is part of our day-to-day, but we can't just accept that it needs to be on by default unless we want it on. And then when it is on, we need to make sure we have the appropriate things enabled, right?
Exactly. Chris, so you want to take over that one, or should we just discuss it together?
You know, to be honest, I have not done a ton with Bluetooth stuff. I've got, you know, certainly from some UD pockets I've plugged in, it's got a Bluetooth in some cases, availability on a laptop or whatever. On the UD7, I've got the Bluetooth piece. I have turned it off already because I don't use it. If you need it for a printer or perhaps a headset, whatever, I mean, you know, go ahead and use it. But looking at it right now, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the default setting is off already. So controlling that officially from a profile. It's a nice if you got it. I mean, I don't know. Do you use Bluetooth headsets yourself?
Well, guys, I guess I would change my statement from earlier. It's trust that it's off. Verify. And then in this case, with the power of the UMS, make sure it's off, right?
Yes.
Our profile that says, mm-hmm. Bluetooth is off. You can't turn it on. Even if you could find a way to get to the setup, which we talked about earlier, you can't turn it on.
Yeah.
That's unbelievably powerful and simple all at the same time. That is, you know, IGL 101.
Yeah, it's especially relevant if you look at the RX 420 device on End Computing powered by AgileOS. There, if I remember right, I would have to double check, to be honest, but I think it was enabled by default since it was searching for a Bluetooth pairing device on boot up. But I would have to double check, to be honest.
Well, if you can see my screen or my video, that's what I got on the big screen behind me. I'll check in a minute because I'm curious myself. Let's go to this next one. Disable console switcher that came up earlier. And that seems extremely valuable. You know, the right person with the right command line or with a command line interface, they can be extremely dangerous. Let's get that turned off.
Definitely. It's an extremely powerful tool for us as an administrator. And I like that feature. I'm leaving it on even on my private PCs or VMs. But at the same time, I'm thinking of some power users who are using some weird keyboard shortcuts for the SAP or whatever application. And I'm not a shortcut expert at all, but if they would just hit Control-Alt-F12 because they were searching for something on their Citrix side, well, they're coming then to the matrix with some black background and white command line interface. It might be scary for some people because going back to the graphic user interface, then isn't that common, because you have to press Control Alt and F1 to coming back. That's something that not a user will find. I have not seen that such often, but I had a couple of times where someone called me and I say, hey, I'm just moving to the command, kind of call, can I go back?
Yeah.
And then the Control Alt F1 is happening.
Yeah, I mean, so forget about security for a minute. You're just trying to protect the user from themselves.
A little bit.
Oh, yeah. If you do get into a Control Alt F11, 12, whatever, the way to get out of that, if I'm not mistaken, is Control Alt F1 returns you back to the and so I definitely had that where I had a virtual machine and I hit Control Alt F11 and my IGEL device, it interpreted that. It said, oh, you want to go to the console or the, so I was like, crap, I guess I'm going to have to do some hotkey changes or something, right? But anyways, Control Alt F1 will get you back to the normal desktop.
Let's go to the next one because it's come up on multiple projects for us, and that is screen lock, screen saver. You know, our Citrix session or whatever is doing its thing, but we also need to make sure the endpoint, especially if it has more writes than maybe it would in a kind of a VDI lockdown mode, a zero client mode. I guess I should say that specifically for our users that know what that means. But if we're going to leave it in less than a zero client mode, we need to make sure that we're not only locking our sessions if we have them, but also the endpoint. Go ahead, guys.
So basically, think about the following situation. You're leaving your workspace for lunchtime, and you are pressing Windows L or whatever hotkey to lock your Windows session. Perfect. That's awesome. Great job. But then if you're not using specific mechanics that we have in AgileOS, if I would join during your lunch your PC and I would like to do some fun stuff with your account, I could just press Control Windows D like desktop. And I could minimize every window on that machine. And that includes also your full screen session. And I would go back to the desktop. And assuming you have more than one application available by your sub browser or whatever, I could start another one because you are still logged in on the endpoint. And I could then do some fun stuff in your name, like asking for a salary increase or whatever, or spending some free pizzas to the whole company. And that's something that we can avoid. The avoid number one is you can, at least it's available on Citrix, saying that we have a local screen lock, so local screen saver more or less, that is starting on the Agile endpoint after a couple of minutes of inactivity that you can define in a profile. Then you can define, if you would like, a standard password for all your users inside of the profile. But it doesn't make sense because if you have the same password for 100 users, I could know the password too and doing the same stuff again and just unlocking the password by using the password, unlocking the screen saver. So what we did is we integrated the screen lock synchronization between your Active Directory user that you use for the store browse connection, for your storefront connection, with the local screen saver. So as soon as you leave your PC, after 5 minutes, the screen lock is starting. And then I would need your password, your Active Directory password to log in, which is, I would not say impossible, but a way more secure than having a generic password or no password at all.
Yeah. And this is a feature probably I haven't played around with too much, I'm looking here. There's a setting under our Citrix storefront login, synchronized Citrix path or screen lock. That's what you're referring to on the end of that, but you know, enabling that, it's really kind of comes down to that walk away security. Users walk away. Do they do something to disconnect their session if it's a remote, or do they do something to lock their device when they leave? In the world of healthcare, it's often that tap your badge kind of thing, or maybe there's an inactivity timeout of sorts. If you're using smart cards, you can actually enable it. They should be pulling their smart card when they leave. And when they do that, yeah.
So you guys are all saying that we can't trust the users just to lock their machines every time they walk away?
Yes. 100%.
You know, I preach that all the time, and then I go to the bathroom and I come back and my screen's unlocked and nobody notices, or somebody notices and gives me a hard time.
That's right.
It's impossible to always do it.
Totally. It's amazing how many solutions were engineered because of that behavior, right? But it's a problem for sure.
Yeah, we could do, maybe at some point they have it to where the hello camera realizes you've walked away. Can you imagine the help desk tickets that would cause every time you put on some glasses or sunglasses or whatever
you're screaming? Yeah. Well, my prior company, we actually did use a camera-based system, and the initial, you know, iterations with it had been on a camera, right? There's one that we ended up with, like a 3D camera that could see at nighttime and infrared and all that stuff. It never really took off. They shelved it, came back with more of a Bluetooth kind of thing now, where you walk away and it detects that you're out of range or whatever. And so more advanced kind of things like that, but over-engineered. I mean, I'm not, that's cool stuff, but at the end of the day, you know, something that's easy to lock or whatever is getting that balance between security and convenience. Yeah. I'm going to take a time to go ahead and pause. I got to start my other session. So I will listen to the rest of the podcast. I'll let you guys run with it here. Thanks again for Andy bringing these up. We look forward to it. Seb, always a pleasure, man.
Take care.
All right, guys.
Thanks, Chris. All right, Seb, we have three more in your article here. The next one is
right.
Post-session command. I think I know exactly what you're talking about there, but tell us what that means.
I would just close the last one with one last sentence, because we spoke about the password synchronization in Citrix, but then some people may ask, what can I do if I'm using VMware Horizon, like an example? Well, you cannot use that feature, but a last one, and then we have closed the screen saver stuff. We have some conditional command. I didn't cover that in that tutorial. I will have to create a new one, by the way. So let's imagine the screen saver starts, and as soon as the screen saver starts, you can define a command line that is executed. And then you can say, okay, use, I can't remember the exact disconnect command for VMware View Horizon from the command line, but you could just say, hey, log off the sync client and log it on again. And that would cause more or less the same behavior, like as soon as the screen saver starts, I'm deleting all the local login data from the sync client or from the endpoint and restarting the desktop like you would start in the morning. So just last one on that note.
Well, I'll add to that one real quick. If you're using a session like a Citrix or a VMware hosted session, you don't actually log off of that. You're just disconnecting. So the user will have to reconnect, but you've really trumped everything with a secure posture at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Agreed.
All right. Your next one is a post-session command. So tell us what that means.
It goes hand in hand with the topic, I'm leaving my workplace. I'm leaving my workplace, or maybe I forget to close my session after going home. So assuming that you have a disconnect job on your terminal server or based off user inactivity, or maybe on time schedule, or just because you're leaving your workspace. As soon as you disconnect your session and you disconnect it or close the last window open concerned by your application browsing, the endpoint will execute a specific command. Mm. So let's imagine you have two desktops opened, you are closing both of them. In a standard way, nothing will happen. If you activate the post-session command, it means that as soon as the session is closed, the thin client, the endpoint, will execute a specific command. This command could be to shut down the device, to reset the device, to log off from the Citrix workspace app or whatever else. You can enter whatever kind of command line command that you have into that field. And that means, especially in terms of security, that as soon as you leave your workspace and you are closing your session, you will log off or shut down your PC. And combined with the second approach, which is not covered there because it's self-explaining, but updates. So you could say, I create a job that every device in my company has to update and shut down. And all our users will not shut down the device on leaving their workspace, they will just leave their workspace and don't push the shutdown button. So that's something that you can then automate by having a post-session command called shutdown. And then you will have for sure all your devices updated as soon as your colleagues are leaving their workspace.
Yeah, that's a perfect one in a session oriented scenario. And I will add to that your scenario where you had two desktops and you enable maybe a workspace app log off in a Citrix scenario. Keep in mind that's gonna if you disconnect from one or log off from one, it's gonna do it for all because it's a local command. I did run into that with a couple of my users here within Zintegra. They would disconnect from their QuickBooks desktop, and all of a sudden the whole thing just rebooted or logged them off and back on, or you know, got them back to a login screen. But extremely powerful, and I'd call that the trump card, right? If I don't know exactly what I want to do. I'm going to, you know, pull out the nuclear weapon, which is reboot the whole thing. And at that point, I know they've got to start the process over again.
It makes especially sense if you think about 24/7 business accounts where your devices cannot be rebooted during daytime or between nighttime, but you can trigger, okay, as soon as someone is leaving their PC, you do a reboot, and during that reboot process, you make an update and boot, and boom, you're good.
Yeah. Hey, Seb, I'm out of time, but this has been great. You've got two more bullets here. The second to last bullet is testing.
Yeah.
I'm cutting a short here, but testing for whether it's applicable, whether it impacts a user negatively, whether it's actually solving the security challenge. I'm cutting a short on maybe the most important one, which is test it, retest it, have other people test it. You know, don't assume that you did it right. Let other people put it through its paces. And then finally, the one we talked about a while ago, removing unneeded features from the GUI. We talked about saving space a while ago, but the other byproduct of that is you lower your attack vector, and there's a huge security benefit in doing that as well.
That's what Chris already mentioned at the beginning, what Josh made. Just remove the IGL setup, remove the ICG connection with that if you don't need it, because it will not give the users a feeling, oh, there's a feature I didn't use. Oh, let's use it right now. So that's something which is pretty, pretty neat.
All right, Seb, as always, thank you. And I'm sorry we got started a little late, but I think we covered the topic pretty well. And you have your blog here,
the video
and the blog. I couldn't ask for anything better. And as always, I appreciate your knowledge and your time.
It was a pleasure. Take care, Andy.
All right, enjoy that weekend. Hopefully you'll get to it pretty soon.
I will. Same to you.
I'm only getting half of one, but that's okay. I'm going to be doing some fun stuff with my team. It'll be good.
Cool.
All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.